You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. We'll talk some football with our buddy Michael Bumpus now. Michael, how are you, man?
I'm all right, guys. How are you doing today?
We're good. You know, we can't get away from this Antonio Brown story, I guess, because, you know, there are videos being posted of him working out with Russell Wilson, and we played some sound from Danny O'Neill. I don't know if you heard what Danny had to say, but he believes that, you know, he's well, let me just play it for you. Here's what Danny had to say about Antonio Brown and the Seahawks' perception of him.
I think acquiring him fits with the approach that Pete and John have generally taken, and I mean that in this sense, that hey, they don't excuse guys from their mistakes. They don't try to say, yeah, you know what, it wasn't that big a deal. But they do like to give people second chances. I don't know if the nature of some of the things he's been accused of and some of the public behavior, like you mentioned on Instagram, but then there's also been actual complaints against him for sexual assault or improprieties. Nothing's been proven. I don't know if how that factors into their decision, but the idea of giving a guy a second chance, they've had some success doing that. Sometimes it's bit him in the butt. But they've had a fair amount of success and coming in and saying, okay, you know what? You've got one chance here. You don't get any latitude. Like if there's a mistake, we're gonna part ways.
So what do you think of that? I mean, and first of all, it wouldn't be his second chance. He's had multiple chances. And the other part of it that we touched on, and I think you and I have touched on this when you were filling in, is that he's been accused of some really serious things that have yet to be cleared up. So that to me is an automatic disqualifier until there's some sort of settlement that yes, he did do this. No, he did not. There's no evidence. There is something needs to be determined in that situation before he plays for anybody.
Yeah, I think that you said it. Nothing's been proven, right? I think that's what is giving Seahawks a window of opportunity because nothing has been proven yet. Now, even being accused of that stuff makes you raise your eyebrows. If you've done your research on the situation, the young lady has come out and said some things. He's put some stuff on Instagram, showing who he is when he's off the field. He shot himself in the foot a couple times. But Bob, you know how it goes. This dude's a baller. Because he's a baller, teams are going to be willing to risk that if it fits them financially. Is that a good thing? No, I wouldn't take a chance on AB. But if the Seahawks did take a chance on AB, I know why they did it. It's because of what he does on the football field and probably because nothing has been proven yet. And this league and this country will forgive you if you provide a talent, if you provide a service that no one else can do or you're one of the best at something. People tend to overlook stuff. Now, for AB, for this thing to happen, I think he has to come in. He has to take the league minimum. He's got to have a sit down with Pete and John Schneider and Russell Wilson. I think they're going to sit down and say, Russell, this is your guy. You got to take care of him. There are a lot of things that need to happen for the Seahawks to make this happen. But the reason why they're even sitting down and having a conversation about it is just because of what he does on the football field. So, unfortunately, this is the way the NFL works. You can be accused of this and that, but if you are really good at a job and the team really needs you, they're going to sit down and have a conversation with you.
Yeah, Bump, I asked Moyer this same thing, and obviously I'm not asking you to name names because I was just thinking back on some of the teammates that I've had. And I think people sort of downplay in some ways the distraction thing gets overplayed a little bit, but when you have a disruptive teammate, it's such a team game. You remember any examples? Because I can think of a few guys that just weren't great in the locker room, and that really affects your team more than, like, I think it directly translates into wins and losses, your chemistry on your football team, and I feel like that part's getting kind of undersold right now.
Yeah, Dave, you're right. That it definitely matters. It's a chemistry game, and I think it affects the position film room more than anything. It can affect the team, and because honestly, you know how it is, Dave. I knew defensive linemen, but I didn't sit down and spend a lot of time with defensive linemen. You know, there's so many guys on the team. You would talk. There were some guys you would connect with, but I didn't really have a lot of time to sit down with a defensive lineman. Now, if there's a guy in that room who feels like a cancer, that D line is going to feel it the most. And then eventually it leaks out. That's for sure. And it makes the film room weird. It makes the locker room weird at times. But these guys are professionals. I also have heard stories about guys on my team that I played on, and he did this and he did that, but I had a great interaction with him, and he played defense, so it didn't really affect my job. And when you look at the bigger picture, you see it happening. You know, there, and I'm not going to name the teammate that I had, but he came in, and coaches couldn't coach him. He was cool with the players, and that's the thing, too. You can have a relationship with a coach or with a situation and with management. If you're cool with the players and you treat them with respect and you're not a distraction to them, you know, they'll accept you. So there are different ways to go about this. I think AB being in that locker room is going to raise some questions. There's going to be more media at practice. People are going to ask other players questions about him. It is definitely going to affect the team. It's all about how this guy treats other people while he's there. He's got to go there. He's got to prove to everybody, I'm not who you think I am, even though you got all this evidence of all these horrible things that I did. If he can convince guys that he's not who the media is portraying them out to be, he has a chance. But you're right, Dave. It definitely affects the mood. But I would focus on the position group.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, Michael, is that I wonder about Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, what they're thinking about all this speculation with Antonio Brown. And I bet publicly if they were asked about it, it'd be a lot different version of what they'd say privately. What do you think they're saying to each other?
Yeah, and those are good guys, right, Jim? I mean, they wouldn't do anything to hurt the team, but I would almost guarantee that they had a conversation. They're going to be professionals. If he is on board, they're going to give him a chance to mess it up or give him a chance to prove that he's changed or whatnot. But they have had to have conversations. I mean, when I was in college and there was a recruit coming in who was, you know, a high recruit and he's supposed to do this and do that, me and my boys had conversations like, who is this guy? You know, what's he really going to be like? I mean, why are they bringing him in? Are they replacing this guy? Is he going to play ahead of that guy? And then in the league, it's amplified because now all these moves are super public and money's involved or whatnot. But Jim, they've definitely had conversations, probably multiple conversations. And end of the day, I think those guys are going to bond together or band together even more with this AB situation, because it's really like he's coming to take one of their jobs. Even though in reality, I don't think he's going to come in and take footballs away from Tyler Lockett and DK. But reality is, I mean, they only throw the ball 25, 30 times a game. So he's going to take targets away. They've definitely had conversations about it.
Well, before we move on from Antonio Brown, I just want to play you what Brock Heward said about it, because he feels like these videos being posted by Russ and showing them working out together is sort of a message from Russ.
It's just my opinion that 2-3 years ago, we would not have seen a workout video with Russell Wilson working out with a star with a sordid past like Antonio Brown. That the league is very clear right now, they don't have answers on whether or not he's ever going to play. And last year, the league shut the door in his face. And I think that was an intentional move, is to make sure that, yep, you're going to see me working out with Antonio Brown and the people I'm close to and in our market that know me. I'm going to make it clear to them. And we've certainly heard a bunch from Jake on our station that, yeah, that from a football perspective, that's the kind of superstar and star talent he wants to see around him. So when that day comes, don't be surprised if we hear and see a little more vocal, a little more transparent, and maybe even just a quarterback that wants a few things done for him here in the second stage of his career.
What do you think of that, Bump? Do you think it's Russell sending a message? This is the type of talent I wanted. You didn't bring it in, or this is the talent I still currently want. What, I don't know if I buy into that, but what do you think?
I think it is a message. We heard Russell talk at what was it, the Pro Bowl, how he wants superstars on the team. You know, that they're going to take them to the next step. And I think AB may have just happened to be in California and they linked up. But I also think that Antonio Brown went to Russell Wilson and asked him if it's okay for him to post his video. You don't just post stuff. I mean, people are private. You're on Russell's secret, not secret, but private backyard. You don't just go around and post things of Russell Wilson. That just doesn't happen. He's that type of player. He's on that level when it comes to the NFL. And Russell probably okayed it. He said, all right, you can post that. So I think Russell has a good relationship with Antonio Brown, and he's definitely up for it. If he felt that AB wasn't a good fit for him or the Seahawks in this situation, I don't think he posts that. I think he still works out with them. I think they still have communication with them, but posting him running routes and running the same route that we saw Tyler Lockett almost master the last couple of years, I think it's sending a message.
You know, Bump, I was sitting here reflecting on all my teammates and people that I have played with, and as far as receivers go, you might be like the most stoic, calm personality that I know that played wide receiver, because they're always volatile. But one of the things, when you think about this, and I don't know how much you thought about this, but almost every other position on the field, you sort of make your own way, you know. But if you're a receiver, yeah, you can run the best route in the world. If first of all, you're relying on the coaches, you know, like, hey, feed this guy the ball, or, you know, you're going to run certain routes that are going to give you opportunities in a game and a game plan. So they actually control a little bit of your performance. And then, of course, there's offensive linemen blocking. There's the quarterback getting the ball there on the money. I mean, that's got to be – I guess I understand why that there's frustration. And, you know, the old cliche of guys coming back to the huddle going, man, come on, I was open. But – you know, when you're a wide receiver, I mean, that's there's a lot you really have to, I don't know, you have to control your emotions probably more than any other position.
Yeah, you do. Honestly, Dave, you can line up, they can call a play, and we can line up, and I look at the defense, I'm like, I'm not getting this football. But I still have to run my route hard just in case. And with Russell Wilson, you never know. So you better be running and moving and getting open, because he's going to make things happen. And you're right, it does. We do depend on a lot of things to go right for us to get the football. And, man, it's crazy. Over the last 10 years, we've gotten that reputation. We're just divas, and and I get it, because we look the nicest out there. You know, the cleats are nice, and they look all pretty and stuff. They're marketable as heck. Like, so they've kind of morphed into this. You know, I don't see a Jerry Rice that way. I think TL was probably one of the first ones that I can remember really going out like that. But
yeah,
I understand the frustrations of the receiver, but, you know, I prefer to take the Marvin Harrison approach. You know what I mean? The Jerry Rice approach. There's different approaches to it. It just seems like more than ever, receivers are speaking out and getting that reputation.
Okay, so Michael, you're not on board with bringing Antonio Brown in. What about Josh Gordon?
Jim, I want to say I enjoyed reading your article today, man. I mean,
thanks.
You said, why not bring both of them in? You know, bring
was
an
it
AB,
optimistic?
And it was not. He was poking fun. I appreciate it, though. I mean, if you think about what Jim said, it's probably the most logical thing, right? You bring in AB, or you bring in Josh Gordon, and if he messes up, he'll be gone. What'd you say, week 10, Jim? And then you bring in AB, and he'll finish the season off. Yeah. If you go off of what they've done in the past, that is the most perfect situation. I'm reading. I'm like, dang, Jim, you got a point here. All right, I can kind of see what you're doing. But I think –
Did you hit your head over the weekend or something, Bump?
Hey, think about what they've done, though. Jim? They always get suspended. That I mean, it makes sense to me. Now, I don't think you do it because of that, but you bring them both in because you want them to play, and you hope that they're all seasoned. But if you go off of their past and what they've done, AB's probably going to get suspended. Josh Gordon most likely will fail a test or whatnot and get in trouble again. That's the perfect situation. I hope that doesn't happen for those guys. I hope they have a bunch of success. I'm just saying, man, Jim, I'm kind of feeling you right there, Jim.
Well, thanks, Michael. And since you gave me a compliment, I want to give you one, too. It was sure a pleasure to work with you a Wednesday morning filling in for Danny and Gallant, you know, because usually I'm stuck with these two hacks in the afternoon who never agree with me. So thank you for being such a great professional and a great coug. So I appreciate that.
Oh, wow, look at that. Nice guy Jim chirping in once again, everybody. Remember that next time he receives a shot and whines about it incessantly. Hey Bump, what did you make of that contract that was just laid out there for Patrick Mahomes? I mean, we haven't seen what all the guarantees are, and they're you know, guarantee mechanisms and things like that they talk about in it, but man, you're talking about, you know, if he collects every penny, which we know he won't, there'll be a restructure, there'll be an opt-out, there'll be something, but that's the richest contract in all of sports, all of American sports, surpassing Mike Trout now.
Yeah, as a football player, I'm happy for the dude, man. Football players, they have the shadiest contracts in all of sports, because you never know when they're going to get injured, so people are afraid to take risks on these guys, which I get it, it's a violent sport, you don't know if he'll be there on Tuesday, so as a football player, I appreciate it. Go get your money, young man. I hope he keeps performing at a high level as well. I know that he has a lot of help around him, and that has made him have a lot of success, and that's good for him. I just hope he continues to grow. I love it. I will never be against any type of athlete getting a bunch of money, because we all shoot for that, and these owners are making a lot of money as well. So why not let the face of your franchise, and probably the face of the NFL now, Let him enjoy it, man. I think it was, what, $503 million after it's all said and done, if it all works out, which, like you said, Bob, we assume that something's going to happen during this contract.
A half a billion dollars, man. And this is very controversial. I'm not. The more I say it, the more I maybe don't believe it. But I've always said that if somebody offered me $1 million or $100 million, I could have one or the other. I might take the million bump because I don't know what $100 million would do to me. I honestly think that would be a challenge. Like what?
You could give me the other 99 million, Dave, and just everybody's happy.
Okay. Bob has volunteered to take the burden off of my
That's right. I don't want you to change, Dave. I will save you from that.
Okay. Thanks, Bob. You're a true friend, man. I know you got my back, but this is ridiculous.
That's right.
No, but I mean, it's just so weird bump that, and I don't sit and complain about like the money that I made because, you know, the guys 20 years before me were, you know, they had like second jobs, you know, to support their families. I mean, I remember Blair Bush, our center, worked at a bank. And finally, I think Chuck Knox got mad about that in the offseason. He was, you know, working as a banker. And so anyway, it just I never begrudge the guys, but it's just weird that that's the exact same game that we played. Maybe they're a little bit faster and stronger and all that stuff. But still, man, it just kind of blows my mind that just, you know, the ability to go out and play football is that pays that much. I don't know. Do you ever reflect on that?
Yeah, it's amazing that a game that you played back in Cali, back in L.A., we used to play light post to light post. And there were, what, about 22 of us out there playing. And everybody could ball. You know, everyone was good at something. And I would even look back and I'm like, out of all those guys who were playing, I was the only one who made it. I guarantee you I played with guys who had more talent than me. You know, it's just certain things happen and your mindset changes. And so he's worked for this moment. He's worked for that money. I don't think he thought he'd be making this much money. And it has to change you, right? You're not the same person in college living off a stipend and as the same person you are when you know you're going to make about $450 million. Things change. Responsibilities change. But honestly, Dave, I would love to have that money. I'll share it with you guys. I'll spend it around. I'd donate to foundations. I mean, I'd find something to do with that money, Dave. I promise you that.
Here's perspective for you, though, Bump, right here. Gil Brandt just sent out this tweet about 17 minutes ago. Coming off of his first Super Bowl win and game MVP, Roger Staubach negotiated his own contract in 1972. We agreed on a 3-year deal worth $75,000 a year.
Wow.
Coming off of a Super Bowl win, and he's the game MVP.
An MVP. Man. Oh, my gosh.
Man, Patrick Mahomes needs to thank guys like that. And, you know, guys like Dave, guys like Ray Roberts, Paul Moyer, the guys who really set this up because the game is the most popular game in the country right now. It's not because of Patrick Mahomes. It's because of all these guys before who really built it up to what it is. So if I'm Patrick Mahomes, I'm thinking all the guys who played before me, man, because honestly, without them, he's not getting this contract. The game's not as popular as it is.
Yeah, see why I love Bump. I love you, Bump.
I was asking John Clayton the same thing, Michael, about Russell Wilson. His contract is up, his new contract where he's making $35 million a year. It's up after the 2023 season. Do you think he's going to end up making $50 million a year at the age of 34?
Oh, man. If he's performing at the level he is now, I say yes, there's a possibility. But if something happens, knock on wood, I'm not even going to say what's the worst thing that can happen. But if something happens and he's not able to perform at the level he's at now, no, he doesn't. It's all about staying healthy and performing. The league is going to pay you if you can perform, especially now because guys are playing longer. You know, guys aren't quarterbacks done at 30, 33 anymore. Guys want to play until 40. It's realistic. They're watching a guy do it in Tampa at 42, 43. So it's a realistic thing now. So it's all about performance and the way they take care of their body. And I think Russell takes care of his body. I think he's learned from guys before him like Tom Brady. Tom Brady, if he didn't take care of his body, he wouldn't be where he is now. So in a few years at 34, I think that's young enough to where if he's putting up 35 touchdowns and less than 10 picks a year, they'll give him his money.
Jim doesn't believe in that 40-plus-year-old guy in Tampa. He says he's going to just fall on his face this year. Too old.
Man, ageist. Man.
He's an ageist.
See those weapons over there?
Shucks.
They got Mike Evans. I mean, Godwin. I mean, I see him performing. I don't see him throwing for over 35 touchdowns, but I see high 20s, and you know he takes care of the football. So We shall see, Jim. I believe in Brady. I don't even like Brady. I never even rooted for him. I appreciate who he is as a player. But I look at those weapons, and I'm like, yeah, man, I could see some things going down in Tampa.
He's 43, Bump.
He threw for over 4,000 yards last year. And everyone talks about how sorry his receivers were. He threw for over 4,000 yards, over 23, 24 touchdowns, more than that. I mean, he still performed. He performed at 42. Why wouldn't he perform at 43 with more weapons?
I think New England with Cam Newton's going to have a better record than Tampa Bay with Tom Brady, though.
Yeah.
Brady's in a tougher division.
He is in a tougher division. I can see Cam. Yeah. You know what? And I like Cam being teamed up with McDaniels as well. He's shown that he can handle a mobile quarterback when he went to Denver with Tim Tebow, won a playoff game. So I want to see how they use Cam. It's all about keeping Cam healthy. Don't ask him to run the offense he ran in Carolina because he's going to get banged up. If they can control, teach him how to run like a small guy. Teach him how to run like Russell Wilson. Get out of bounds. You know, slide. You humble yourself a little bit. But he said he's tired of being humble, so I don't know if he'll do that. But put your butt down.
it finally wore him out, Bump. He could no longer maintain this humble persona. It's just taking too much energy. So that's over now. And we'll see a new version, I guess. Bump, we love you, man. Thanks for joining us. As always, stay safe. We'll be talking to you soon, I'm certain.
All right, thanks. Talk to you soon.
There you go. Michael Bump is talking football with us. Coming up, is it possible for a 60-game season to be a disappointment on any level for a Mariners team that wasn't really expected to compete in a regular season? We'll talk about it next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Well, the Mariners continue their workouts, getting ready for the season, which will get underway around, the 23rd is the opening of the season, and the Mariners' first game is the 24th, right, DJ? Yeah, so we are just weeks away from the beginning of the season. But I was thinking about it last night, guys, just wondering, all right, 60 games in 66 days. All we heard going into this season was it's not about the wins and losses. It's about developing the core and developing the future. So we're not going to get caught up in how many wins and losses they have. It's about seeing these guys. Is that still true in a 60-game season? Because how much development can you truly see over a 60-game period? This is typically 60 games might be where you see a guy start to get his feet under him and start getting used to this level of pitching or this level of play overall and finding a comfort level. So I'm not really sure what to expect out of the young guys. I guess I'd be disappointed if I didn't see them play quite a bit. You know, the guys that are up, I don't want to see them rush anybody. I'm not saying call up, you know, Rodriguez and call up, you know, Kelnick and get everybody up here right now. Because there is no urgency to that. There's no reason for it. But the guys that are here, the Evan Whites and Shed Longs and J.P. Crow, all those guys, even if they scuffle coming out of the gates, I mean, this just feels like a season where you let guys figure it out, work it out, and get the young guys rolling as much as you can in 60 games.
Yeah, can you guys hear me? You cut out there for a second.
Yeah,
but you know, is there a disappointing outcome for this season? Because yeah, well, in the first question I was going to ask you guys, what is it with Kyle Seager? It's like May, right, when he starts warming up.
Yeah, he'll be warm as soon as it all ends this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's just known as a slow starter. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that. But I guess, you know, DJ's been joking around about how, you know, they're going to go 5-55. Would we really care? I mean, there's basically no pressure on this team right now because they're certainly not expected to win. And, you know, like you said, you just want to see the development take place. But I feel like, I don't know, it could be a good thing. It could be a bad thing. But, you know, there's none of that pressure to win, right? And then, you know, the bad side could be, well, if, you know, you don't allow guys in just 60 games to be able, and that's why I brought up Kyle Seager, you know, that's not a complete season. And, you know, so it's going to be difficult for some of these guys to kind of get brought along. You know, you're being robbed of two-thirds of a season.
Well, the only thing I'd say record-wise, if they go 5-55, that means that Shed Long, J.P. Crawford, Evan White, Kyle Lewis, and Jake Fraley probably didn't do very well while they're trying to develop to be core members of your World Series contending team in 2022. So that's, yeah, I'm hoping that they do much better than that. I was thinking, I mean, I think the high watermark would be 30 and 30, but, you know, 25 and 35, even 23 and 37, something like that, where at least you see the younger guys come through. The veterans, you know, are guys that you, like Malik Smith, honestly, I don't know why they're trotting him out there in center field. We already know what he is as a center fielder. Maybe he's going to make some dramatic improvements, but I don't think he's going to be a core guy. But let's just say Malik Smith stinks it up out there in center field and doesn't hit well. Well, that's okay because he's not part of your future anyway. I don't think. I mean, that's my impression. Maybe I'm off on that. Who knows? But I just want to see the young guys do well, just like anybody else. And so, yeah, 5 and 55, that would mean they didn't do well. And so the record has to be much better than that.
Well, yeah, that extreme, I get the disappointment. But if they're 20 and 40, 25 and 35, to me, it's like, well, all right, what's the difference? It's, you know, and what are the reasons that their record is that bad? Was it that, hey, these young guys can hit, they can field, but you're pitching. Oh, boy. You know, Kikuchi didn't really improve much. In fact, he went the other way. Or Taiwan Walker hasn't really recovered from that surgery, and he was getting lit up. I mean, there are a lot, but we don't have a bullpen. Or it could be a lot of different reasons as to why they don't succeed record-wise, but maybe these young guys do still show you some promise.
Hey, you know what just occurred to me, Bob and Dave? If let's say they're 15 and 40 with five games left to go in the season, will you hope they lose the rest of them so they get the number one pick?
I don't think I would mind. I think this is a year where I'm not, you know, sitting here dreaming of the postseason. I don't think it's a reality. I think if those guys show promise and you're talking about the difference between having the first overall pick and the fifth or something like that, then yeah, five game skid, here we come.
Oh, man. Well, I'll tell you what, and one of the things I think you wrote, Bob, is, you know, what if Kyle Lewis, you know, comes back and has kind of this sophomore slump and strikeouts or whatever. I was on the Mariner website watching his home runs. Would he have 6 in 10 games?
Yeah.
What a beautiful swing he has. Oh, and I he's the guy I'm most excited to see play. I mean, we all want to see Jared Kelenic and Julio Rodriguez, but that's going to be a ways off. But this kid, oh, man, I just – and his story, everything, it got me really fired up to watch baseball. But I honestly don't think I would care that much. And I don't – yeah, you know what? I would tank, Jim. I would. I would throw all the young guys in there. And see if you can get the number one pick, because this has been a while now where they've gotten some good top 10 picks in this draft, and just keep it going.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Lewis, Dave, and I saw the comment from Scott Service talking about the sky's the limit with him. He could really take this thing as far as he wants. He's got that kind of ability. So he's certainly a player to watch this year. And we see the schedule came out today. We finally have it. Shannon Dreher texted it to us, and they open at Houston with a 4-game series, and then they play at the Angels for 3. It's kind of funny, though, because you sit there and you go, well, the home opener is going to be July 31st, and usually there's all kinds of fanfare, and then you go, oh, that's right, no fans. But they've got like a 10-game homestand after that, and we're just going to be watching all the games anyway on TV. But the interesting thing I saw is, as far as game times go, there's only one 7-10 first pitch at T-Mobile Park this year. The rest of them are either 6-10 or 6:40, and then there's some afternoon starts of 1:10, and I think there's one that's at 3:40. But I think the Mariners are experimenting anyway. I mean, it appear to be this way, with a 6:10 or a 6:40 start as opposed to the usual 7-10 starts they've had in the past.
I wonder why that is.
Well, it doesn't seem like they're taking our show into consideration, are they? They're going to be preempting us.
That's going to hurt Jim's feelings. He's not going to appreciate that at all.
No, I'm looking forward to interrupting Shannon Dreher, though, with her Mariners Insider report.
Oh, I missed that. I missed that, too.
Yeah. You had her on the show, sitting in with you. You were nice for a few hours, and now we're back to taking shots at Shannon.
Probably.
Yeah. By the way, here's Scott Service. You brought up, Jim, what he had to say about Kyle Lewis. Here's the audio of that.
I mentioned it early on. He's one of the guys that stood out to me. I just thought he was moving so differently. Watching him shagging fly balls in the outfield, and that's a direct reflection of the work that he put in, you know, while we were down at home. And he took it serious. Yeah, I know he's got a speed coach, a strength coach, hitting coach. You know, he dialed in with all those people. And he looks much different.
I'm pulling for Kyle Lewis in a big way. He just, anytime you hear him speak, and anytime we've had a chance to speak to him, he comes across as just a really grounded, down-to-earth kid. He's overcome a really, really serious knee injury with so much hype attached to him, and to have that kind of setback and him getting off to that start last year was awesome in a season where by the time he was up and that start happened, they're out of it. I mean, nobody's thinking that he's going to carry him to the postseason, but it was just cool to have that positive storyline to cling to. So I'm hoping he takes that next step. I know it's 60 games, but if he can just show that, man, he is just a different guy, whether it's in the outfield or his eye is more discerning up at the plate, whatever it is, I am pulling for him in a huge way.
Yeah, and Serva saying he looks different in a good way. I was like, wow, I'd just like it if he looked the same as he did at the end of last year, because he was fantastic. I didn't realize this, that he, I guess it was a play at the plate where he tore his knee up. And but yeah, I mean, he's once you go through a rehab like that, it's, you know, and I asked him this before, you know, if you could go back, would you change it? And he said no, because it gives you a whole new work ethic of like pushing yourself. You don't know how hard you can push yourself until, you know, you get threatened with possibly, you know, the game being taken away from you. So, because I was told I'd never play football again, and I was like, oh, man, I'm going to work as hard as I can. You find new thresholds. So, yeah, this kid, he's just fantastic. It was one of my favorite parts of last season, watching him hit those home runs with his family in the stands celebrating.
Oh, that's right, with his family there, yeah. Well, Kyle Lewis and then Jake Fraley, and then on the pitching side, you're looking forward to seeing what Justice Sheffield and Justin Dunn can do. And then I was even looking at Yusei Kikuchi, and we know he was disappointing last year, but hopefully this year it seemed like he made some changes in his delivery and his velocity is up, and he's only 29 years old, so he could be a factor in the future as well.
Well, you brought up Logan Gilbert. He is going to be the subject of our Mariner profile. We've been taking a look at a player each and every day, and you could argue one of the most exciting young arms in the entire farm system. So we'll take a closer look at Logan Gilbert next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We're talking baseball. We've been taking a look at a Mariner player every day, just trying to get to know this team. A lot of young guys on this roster and part of the future. Hopefully, one of the guys that a lot of people are counting on would be Logan Gilbert, one of the more exciting young arms in the system. He's drafted with the 14th pick back in 2018 out of, what is it? Stetson University. Where is that?
Stetson.
Is that Texas?
It's in Florida.
Stetson?
Yeah, because of the hat.
Yeah, I was thinking Texas.
I think it's in Florida, actually. It's Central Florida.
DeLand, Florida, it says, if that's how you pronounce it.
Mm. Wow, okay.
Yeah.
All right. And, so he's a guy a lot of – I mean, he's started five games in single-A West Virginia before he moved up to high-A Modesto, where he – only started in 12 games and then ended the season in Double-A Arkansas. His overall stats for 2019, 10-5 with a 2.13 ERA over 135 innings, only allowed 7 home runs across all three levels, 185 strikeouts. I mean, he's got a ton of upside, ton of potential. We talked to Ryan Roland-Smith about him. This is what he had to say about Logan Gilbert.
I'm going to predict now, and I'm not because I've seen him this spring. Matter of fact, I don't think I've ever seen him. I've seen him once in spring training last year, and in Double A, Logan Gilbert is going to be a stud. Just by watching the video and just seeing his makeup and what I hear from other teams, you know, like the farm director for the Minnesota Twins, Alex Hassan, a good friend of mine, he said, man, that Logan Gilbert, you know, this is a year ago, even now, every evaluation on him is he is going to be a stud. And when you watch him go about it, I think he's a guy that is just going to quietly get that 200 innings and just be absolute horse on the mound.
You love hearing that, and you got just a really brief look at him in spring training. Faced just 13 batters, had a 0 ERA over 4 innings pitch. So take that for what it's worth. Night, we always qualify spring training stats, but as a young arm that you're counting on, to hear that from a guy who pitched at the highest level in Ryan Roland-Smith, to see these numbers, high sky. And then, just seeing the upside to him, you can't help but be excited about his potential. Along with other guys, you've got Dunn, you've got Sheffield. Obviously, Marco is your ace right now. We'll see what Kikuchi has, but you got to feel good about the young arms in this organization.
Yeah, and they've had some good top 10 picks, as we just mentioned, George Kirby. And by the way, I guess Stetson is in the Atlantic Sun Conference. Didn't know that, but pitcher of the year in 2018, he was 11-2, 2.72 ERA. I was reading a little bit about some of the stuff that he was going through. Shannon Dreher wrote a good article about him that, you know, it's just tough trying to develop, you know, for pitchers. And, you know, he's talking about not lamenting over this whole thing, the lockdown, but he's just not getting the opportunities. But he's going to be on the Mariners taxi squad, I guess, with Kirby, Emerson Hancock, Brandon Williamson, Isaiah Campbell, all of them first-round draft choices. And, it's just he's one of those guys that kind of – and for me – whenever I hear his name, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, because you get kind of lost. All of these young players that they have that we've been hearing about and talking about and just really haven't seen. So hopefully he's able to make the best of it and you know, be one of those guys that actually takes a step and gets something out of this 60-game season, because I think, you know, those are the guys that it hurts the worst, right? The young guys that are looking to get experience.
Yeah, you mentioned that taxi squad, Dave, and all those guys being first-round draft choices, and you know that somewhere along the line, and you like to think it's going to work out for all of them, but typically with pitchers, there's an injury or two along the way, but they've got so many guys, so many live arms that you like their chances of developing and being part of a World Series contending team, hopefully in the 2020s, but boy, when you look at Logan Gilbert and what he did last year and how he excelled at every level that he was at, all three levels, including Double-A Arkansas. He had 18 shutout innings in one stretch. So, yeah, it's going to be fun to see how these guys develop. And Gilbert was also talking, I think, in Shannon's story about how it's going to be kind of cool that all these guys can get to know each other and come together in one spot down there in Tacoma on the taxi squad. And they'd probably be pitching at different levels, so they wouldn't have that closeness and togetherness that they're going to have. I don't know how much that plays a role in things, but I like that they're going to get to know each other and they can test each other there at the same field at Cheney Stadium.
Yeah, and I know we're breaking down Logan Gilbert, but just to speak to the youth of this rotation and some of the guys to look forward to, when we brought up Justice Sheffield, Scott Servais talking about Justice Sheffield, saying he's taken the biggest step forward of all of the young pitchers.
He was in an awesome spot when we left Arizona. Of all of our young pitching, he probably took the biggest step forward. I thought he had a great spring training. What we saw in the spring was his total. I mean, for Justice, has always been, you know, good fastball, running, sinking fastball with the dominating slider. And he really took off with the changeup. So he added a third pitch, real quality pitch, a lot of action to it, was trusting it, throwing it a ton. We shut down and had a lot of momentum and confidence. That hasn't changed.
So high praise from the skip there, and you know, we'll see what happens with Taijuan Walker and Kikuchi and, you know, some of these guys that you're looking at to sort of fill the gaps. But you're looking at Dunn, you're looking at Sheffield, you're looking at Gilbert, you're looking at these guys to really round out. And I know we've been down this road before, right, with the big three, with Holtzen and Walker and Paxton, yeah. And unfortunately only one of them truly turned out for the Mariners anyway. You made a good trade with Taijuan Walker at the time, but you know, Holtzen, we know how things went for him. So when it comes to pitching, you've got no guarantees. There's no certainty because of, you know, it's such an unnatural motion, and there's so much torque on the elbow and the shoulder. You just don't know when it's going to go the wrong way. But just the potential that exists within all in Kirby, the other guy you brought up, Dave, they have got, it feels like, just a wealth of pitching potentially to fill out a rotation where you're hoping for a 1-3, and then 4 and 5 just eat up some innings, keep us in the game. Maybe they've got a 1-4 or 1-5 at some point. That's solid top to bottom.
Yeah, it'll be interesting what Scott Servais said there to see what Justice Sheffield looks like. What's the big? He said he took the biggest step on the mound, and I remember, Jim, when we were down there last year, going out and watching him throw a simulated game. And, you know, it's just hard to tell whether it was good or bad or, you know, indifferent. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, what what service saw there, because he just looked like, you know, regular prospect out there throwing, and, you know, it looked fine. But, I mean, there's all these little nuances, and those guys have such an eye for it. It'll be interesting to see Logan Gilbert and Justice Sheffield, some of those guys that you know, take that step, and see him get lit up too, because, I mean, that's part of it too. That's the you know, remember in Bull Durham, man, those big league hitters are going to light you up for a while.
Yeah.
but it'll be a good experience for those guys, and hopefully they're able to come out of this thing and not be like the Panda Bear, or what's his name,
Kung Fu Panda
down there, DJ
Kung Fu Panda,
the guy in San Francisco. Yeah. Pablo Sandoval. Hopefully they come out of this thing in really, really good shape, unlike Pablo Sandoval.
Round,
you see those
pictures
of him? Holy, yeah, that's true. That's a good point. Yeah. Holy smokes.
No, I'm with you on Sheffield. I think I remember, was it last year when he was either, I think he either started the game or he came in briefly after the starter went out, but boy, did he struggle. It was just, he labored through his time out there. And so it really encouraging to hear Scott Servais with such high praise for Justice Sheffield. And we'll get a chance to see him hopefully in 10 to 12 starts at the major league level. And then Justin Dunn getting an opportunity too, because it was either going to be Dunn or Walker coming out of spring training on who the number five guy was. And it looked like Walker was healthy enough to take that spot where Dustin or Dunn probably would have been in Tacoma, or maybe he would have been down pitching class double A there for Arkansas. But either way, I mean, it's going to be nice. I mean, Justin Dunn now a 6-man rotation. He's the sixth guy, and we'll see what he has too.
All right. Good there. Good stuff there. We'll continue looking at Mariner players as we get you set for the opening of the season. Hopefully it does open on time and they're able to finish all 60 games. I think that would be considered a success. They just play all 60 at this point. There's always learning happening on this show, and we're going to find out exactly what it is we've learned today. What we learned coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
Really is amazing how much stuff we really do know. We put it on display every single day, don't we, DJ?
Especially now that you're back in studio, I feel like it's a little easier now to traverse through everything.
Yeah, there's a little timing. We can see when somebody's done talking versus talking over each other. It just helps a little
good.
Bit. What did we learn today?
Well, we learned how you, Bob, feel about Tyreek Hill.
Bob, I was just wondering, how can you root for Patrick Mahomes when he's throwing to Tyreek Hill, who you probably hope drops every ball that he throws to him?
I don't root for Tyreek Hill.
No, I know that. So it's kind of difficult, because when Mahomes throws to him,
yeah,
do you hope that he drops it? Or
yeah, what? I hope it bounces off his face mask. I hope it bounces off his helmet. He falls down. He looks ridiculous. I hope it's a perfect pass for Mahomes, hits him between the numbers, and then he turns, Tyreek Hill turns into Butterfingers and just shames himself repeatedly on national television. So everybody will go, oh, that was a dime from Mahomes and Tyreek Hill. He can't hang on to anything. That's what I'm looking forward to, Jim. How about that?
Okay. Well, that worked for me, Bob.
Boy, that would be fun. I would look forward to those highlights every weekend with great anticipation.
Bob, no likey Tyreek Hill.
No. No likey even a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Bob, what would you do if Tyreek Hill was on the Seahawks?
I would root for the same things. Russell Wilson throwing dimes. He becomes just the object of everybody's ire. All the venom being poured out. Why is this guy on the field? Sit him down, Pete. What are you doing playing this guy? He can't hang on to anything. Sit him.
Okay, Super Bowl, they're on a game-winning drive. Russell Wilson spots him all alone in the end zone with no time left to beat the Patriots. Do you want him to catch the ball or drop it?
I want it to bounce off of his helmet straight up into the air, and then DK comes down with the
Tyler
ball.
Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, one of those two guys. They catch the ricochet off of his face mask, and they come down with a game-winning touchdown.
Okay.
Bob's got an answer for everything, man.
That, I guess that was well so. Done. I thought you'd say, in that instance, he can catch that one.
No, he just serves as a guy that's playing volleyball with his face, and it just bounces into the air, and then somebody deserving of those accolades and that sort of appreciation catches the ball.
How about this, Bob? You have to sign either Antonio Brown or Tyreek Hill.
Oh, jeez.
Would you quit? quit as GM?
Yeah, I would say, where's Josh Gordon? Where is he?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be, I would love the ability of both those guys. That talent on the field would be super exciting, but they both come with their personalities and their character, which are both lacking. So I don't want either one of those guys.
Maybe you can make the person that comes here just wear a mask the entire time, so you couldn't really see his mouth moving, or you couldn't really hear it be muffled.
Jeez. Who would you take, Antonio Brown or Tyreek Hill?
I guess Tyreek Hill, because he's playing in the NFL now.
But
both are really, really hard to root for.
Jim?
One
choked his pregnant girlfriend, and then we heard him on the phone about all of a sudden their infant child ended up with a broken arm, and nobody seems to know how. The other guy's accused of rape. I mean,
with Antonio Brown.
Okay, neither.
I'd go with Brown because they're just allegations and accusations at this point.
Boy, a couple of good
eggs. Yeah, I'm gonna switch. I'm gonna switch to Antonio Brown since you just ran through that whole litany. Like,
don't you just feel like you lose either way? You're just like, I feel dirty. Yeah. I feel bad about both of these.
What a bad question I posed. Sorry, guys. I put us all in a bad spot.
You did. Took us down a dark path. What else did we learn, DJ?
We learn about Dave's new names for the NFL team in Washington, D.C.
Is one of the options spiders?
I think so. Isn't it, Jim?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was just looking around for what I sent you guys. I think Red Tails is number one, the betting choice. There's also Washington Generals. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. No, the Globetrotters and Generals. No, you can't call them the Washington Generals. Yeah.
I don't think there's enough creepy animal logos or, like a bat or a snake or a spider.
The cobras.
Or like a flea. Yeah, a cobra, rattlesnake.
A flea.
Well, you got the diamondbacks. A tick.
The ticks. The fleas. The Washington fleas.
I've got the names now.
Okay, what are our options?
BetOnline.ag. Red Tails, 3-1 favorite. Generals 4-1, Presidents 5-1, Lincolns 6-1, Veterans 8-1, Capitals 9-1, and then I'll end it with Americans, Memorials, and Monuments at 10-1.
The Capitals, isn't that a hockey team, the Washington Capitals?
I think it might be. But you remember the Cardinals in St. Louis, they had football team and baseball team.
It's true.
Yeah, that's right.
Red Tails is a favorite. What is a red tail? Is that a bird?
I don't know.
Is that some
Maybe
sort of bird, DJ?
I was going to say that's a state bird, but it's Washington, D.C.
Yeah, not a state.
Well, the first thing that comes up when I Google red tail is some movie from 2012 called Red Tails. And then
it's not a porn, is it?
No.
There's a red. Bob would be familiar. No.
How did you come up with that, Bob?
That's just where my mind goes, Jim. I
guess
I don't know.
So. Yeah,
Dave something. Knows this.
I'm looking at a bunch of fish with red tails. So I think it's a type of fish.
It's a fish. There's a red-tailed hawk.
Oh.
Well, red hawks is 15-1.
Is it?
Red-tailed hawk.
What's funny is, as goofy as any of these sound, they all become normal at some point, right? The more you repeat them, the more you hear it, you just sort of, you're numb to it. So I don't know if I'm a fan of the team and I live out there, I don't think I like red tails.
I don't like any of these on this betting list.
Yeah. What'd you say?
I like the spiders. Spiders are warming up for me.
Wasn't that Cleveland's name? Weren't they the Cleveland Spiders
in baseball?
It was
like the early 1900s, I think. Yeah.
Maybe the Indians will change their name back to the Spiders.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. What else did we learn, DJ?
We learned Jim isn't humble.
Could you eat 8 in 10 minutes?
I'd give a hell if somebody offered me $5,000.
I'm not asking would you try. I'm saying what realistically, how many could you eat and keep down in 10 minutes?
I think I could get 8 hot dogs down.
Really? That's pretty good, man.
I'm guessing. I don't know if I could or not. I mean, I boast about a lot of stuff that I'm not capable of, but what the heck? I'd give it a shot with hot dogs.
Whoa, wait a minute. We need to make sure you save that audio, DJ. I boast about a lot of things I'm not very good at, like pool and horse and
hey, horse
pong.
Horse I am good at.
Beer guzzling.
beer guzzling, I am good at. But, you know, it sounds like Moyer's a Hall of Fame chugger. So I don't think I'm Hall of Fame, but, you know, I'm a Coug, so I can chug beers.
I boast about a lot of things I'm not capable of.
Yeah, what the heck, you know? No one would ever know, so you might as well just boast about it.
Well, finally, the truth comes out.
He's putting himself in a position where people will know, though. You're challenging people. You're challenging, you know, Bobby Wagner to ping pong, and you're challenging...
Pool,
yeah. Who was ping pong? Was that Nico Thorpe?
Oh, ping pong, I used to think I was pretty good, but I'm not.
Who was that? Was that Nico you were challenging?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think he's the best player.
And who were you going to hit? You said you could hit Felix Hernandez fastball if he gave you 10 pitches?
Well, you know, the softballer there at Washington, I thought I would take her deep into Lake Washington. The Hall of Fame, what was her name again? Her brother's in...
Jenny.
Her brother's in... He played for the Blue Jays.
No.
Lowry.
Oh.
Lowry.
Dave, you're thinking of Jenny Finn.
Danielle Lowry.
Yeah, exactly. Danielle Lowry. Yeah. So what, you foul tipped her?
No, I didn't even make contact.
You whiffed?
Yeah.
How many pitches? How many?
I think I got 3, maybe 5. I didn't even come close.
Wow.
And I got in a wreck on the way there just before the Montlake Bridge, so it was just a disastrous day.
Wow. Were you humbled?
That was your excuse.
Yeah, I was very humbled.
Jim's done being humble.
Yeah.
We learn anything else, DJ?
Him and Cam Newton.
That is all we learned today.
All right. Good stuff. Thanks to our guests today, Ryan Divish, John Clayton, and Michael Bumpus, all joining us on the show today. If you missed anything from today's show or any day, just head to 710sports.com, click the podcast button, and then click on our picture. It's all right there waiting for you each and every day. We're back tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
I'm protecting naked 60-year-olds.